Welcome back to Noracast Tech Briefing.
Good to be here.
We are tracking some massive shifts in how the industry values artificial intelligence today, both at the macroeconomic level and right down to the specific skills hiring managers actually want on their development teams.
Plus, we have some bizarre AI translation artifacts showing up in peer-reviewed medical journals.
Right. We will look at the kidney disappointment phenomenon in the roundup. First, let's examine a new economic thesis out of China. Let's start with a piece published recently in Qiushi by Tong Jie. He is the co-founder of Zipu AI, one of the leading foundation model startups in China, and a computer science professor at Tsinghua University. The article makes a bold macroeconomic argument, framing tokens as the fundamental engine of the intelligent economy.
The analogy he draws is directly to the industrial era. Back then, energy commodities like coal and oil dictated global economic power. Tang argues that in the coming decades, computational throughput, specifically measured in token volume, is going to fill that exact same role.
It is a subtle but important shift in focus. Western conversations usually obsess over who has the most raw compute hardware or who is securing the most venture capital. Tang is looking past the data center infrastructure to the actual output. The token is the basic unit of economic work.
Which makes total sense when you look at where enterprise AI is heading. We are moving away from simple chat interfaces where a human reads every single word. The future is autonomous agent workflows that burn through millions of tokens in the background to complete a single complex task.
Exactly. If tokens are the new energy, then the cost of a token dictates what kinds of automated labor are economically viable. If you can generate tokens a fraction of a cent cheaper than a competitor, you can afford to run far more complex, multi-step agent loops.
I wonder how much this reflects Beijing's broader strategic vision for the technology. Framing tokens as an economic engine suggests they view AI not just as a software product, but as fundamental national infrastructure. If tokens are a utility, the goal is to produce them at big scale and subsidize the traditional industries running on top of them.
It definitely contrasts with the messaging we hear from Western frontier labs. OpenAI and Anthropic are obviously focused on driving down inference costs, but their public narrative is usually centered on achieving specific reasoning benchmarks or artificial general intelligence. Tang is talking about pure industrial-scale throughput.
And if throughput is the metric that matters, it changes how you evaluate national competitiveness. A country might have fewer cutting-edge chips, but if they optimize their models to produce usable tokens at a large, cheap scale, they could still dominate the economic application layer.
That focus on throughput and agentic workflows connects directly to our next story. Andrew Ng just published an AI engineering skills map for August 2026. He based this on a sizable dataset, synthesizing over 10,000 job postings, plus dozens of structured interviews with hiring managers and recruiters.
The most striking part of the map is what didn't make the cut. Basic prompting is completely omitted from the top technical tier. Writing clever prompts is basically table stakes now.
Right. Instead, the core skills he highlights are things like using coding agents and shaping the build. These are categories that lacked formal HR definitions even back in 2022.
Shaping the build is essentially an architectural judgment role. Now that tools like Cursor or Claude can generate the syntax for you, the bottleneck isn't typing the code. The bottleneck is knowing how to structure the system so the agent doesn't write itself into a corner.
It completely redefines what makes a development team efficient. You no longer need a mid-level developer to spend 3 days writing a standard API integration. You need an engineer who can review the agent's work, spot the security flaws, and enforce the broader system design.
Which is much harder to train for. Syntax is objective. It either compiles or it doesn't. Architectural judgment usually comes from years of making mistakes in live production environments.
Ning's map formalizes the shift we have been seeing anecdotally. The human software engineer is transitioning from a manual writer to a reviewer and an orchestrator.
If your team is still bottlenecked by manual code generation, you are going to lose out to teams that know how to direct agentic workflows.
And it raises a really difficult question for the industry pipeline. If the entry-level syntax jobs are being handled by coding agents, how do junior engineers get the repetitions they need to develop that high-level architectural judgment? We might be optimizing for speed today at the cost of training the next generation of senior engineers.
That is the exact tension hiring managers are trying to navigate right now.
Let's look at a company trying to apply that kind of high-level AI to clinical diagnostics. Tempus AI just reported their Q2 2026 numbers, and the top-line growth is solid. Revenue hit $382.5 million, marking a 22% increase year over year.
They also had a major academic milestone this month, a study detailing their PRISM-2 Multimodal Pathology Foundation model, which they developed alongside Microsoft, was published in Nature Medicine.
On paper, that sounds like a perfect quarter. Revenue is growing, they have third-party validation from one of the most prestigious medical journals in the world, and they just entered a new commercial lab partnership with CellCarta to expand their oncology diagnostics distribution.
But Wall Street is completely split on their outlook. Following the earnings and product updates, firms like Stifel and HC Wainwright actually cut their price targets. On the flip side, Needham maintained a buy rating with a target between $75 and $80.
Part of the downward pressure is coming from recent insider selling, but there is also a broader skepticism about the timeline of their business model. Tempus sits at the intersection of routine clinical testing and AI data brokering. They run genetic and pathology tests and then use that data to build big data sets for pharmaceutical research.
The real question is whether they can convert that data flywheel into durable long-term profitability. Academic validation, like the Nature Medicine paper, proves the underlying technology works. It proves PRISM-2 can extract meaningful biological insights from pathology slides. But does that translate into immediate pricing power with biopharma companies?
Right. Healthcare is notoriously slow to adopt new diagnostic workflows. A model might be highly accurate in a retrospective study, but getting hospital systems to change their standard of care and actually pay for the AI analysis is a large multi-year sales hurdle.
It feels like Tempus is caught between two distinct investor bases. Tech investors want software-like margins and exponential growth right now, while healthcare investors understand the immense regulatory and adoption friction involved in clinical diagnostics. The split analyst consensus reflects that tension perfectly.
It will be interesting to see if the CellCarta partnership can accelerate that clinical adoption, or if it remains a slow burn.
A Hacker News thread highlighted a Google Scholar search that brings up roughly 189 academic papers using the exact phrase kidney disappointment.
Instead of kidney failure?
Yes, it is a classic tortured phrase. It happens when people use automated text spinners or poor machine translation tools to try and bypass plagiarism checkers.
Scientific sleuths have found other examples too, like using the phrase bosom peril instead of breast cancer, or joined together states instead of the United States. It sounds funny on the surface, but it points to a severe pollution problem in scholarly publishing.
These low-quality AI-assisted papers are somehow clearing basic editorial screening and peer review, and then flooding academic databases. It makes you question the reliability of the indexes we depend on for research.
Anthropic has started publishing historical release notes for their consumer-facing system prompts. You can now read the exact core instructions running behind the Claude.ai web interface and their mobile apps. Starting with the Claude 4.6 generation, they map each model ID to a fixed version snapshot with dated entries tracking periodic behavior updates. It is a strong transparency move. Developers can watch the diffs and see exactly how Anthropic patches behavioral edge cases over time.
Just keep in mind, these apply to the consumer apps, not direct API requests. They handle baseline metadata like current dates and stylistic guidance, like telling the model to use Markdown for code snippets.
Still, it gives a rare look into how frontier labs steer model personality and manage real-time data integration before a user types a single word.
Speaking of Claude, there is a highly requested feature open for Claude Code regarding GitHub access. Users want the ability to grant the Anthropic Cloud Runner access to a single, specific repository. Right now, Anthropic Cloud Execution requires you to link your entire GitHub identity to your Claude.ai account via OAuth. If you are a consultant juggling personal, company, and client repositories, handing over global access is a sizable friction point.
A repo-scoped connection would solve that entirely. You wouldn't have to worry about a scheduled routine accidentally pulling code from the wrong client's repository.
Mozilla is rolling out an optional, native ad blocker built directly into Firefox for iOS. It works at the network level and targets third-party ad networks, trackers, and pop-ups using a filter list based on EasyList.
It is disabled by default through a progressive rollout. Notably, it explicitly excludes search engine result page ads from places like Google, Bing, and DuckDuckGo.
Which is a pragmatic compromise. Historically, iOS users had limited options because Apple mandated WebKit restrictions, forcing alternative browsers to act mostly as skins.
Mozilla is offering aggressive tracking protection here, while acknowledging the financial reality of their search revenue dependencies.
Finally, a post-hoc analysis of the SELECT Phase 3 trial, published in Alzheimer's and Dementia, looked at semaglutide and cognitive health. Researchers tracked 2,970 patients aged 65 and older with cardiovascular disease. Using a 25-protein blood plasma panel called the DSST, they found that 104 weeks on a 2.4 milligram dose of semaglutide was linked to a 26% lower predicted 5-year dementia event rate compared to placebo. And about 72% of that protective effect remained even after adjusting for weight loss. That suggests the drug is working through independent vascular and anti-inflammatory mechanisms.
Dedicated phase 3 trials treating active Alzheimer's patients with semaglutide didn't succeed in slowing the disease. But this data supports the idea that GLP-1 drugs could act as a preventive metabolic shield if taken before clinical symptoms appear.
That is all we have for today's briefing.
Thanks for listening. We will be back tomorrow with more updates.
See you then.